You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
The house lights here, and we'll play some game here, all right? Now, I've got some couples here from the audience that are going to be a part of what's going to happen today. So, first of all, why don't we bring on up Eric and Terry Kress? Come on up! Woo-hoo! Have a seat. Have a seat as a back-to-back. Back-to-back, please. You can go. And then my next couple today is Natalie and Jason Fetters. Come on up. Come on. Yeah. All right. Okay, and then finally, why don't we have Mr. and Mrs. Brock Seiler, Brock and Jeff Seiler. Why don't you come on up? So sit back to back here, as well as a couple. And we are going to play the yearly wed game, okay? All right, how about it? All right. Okay, good. You guys ready? Are you ready, sir? Good, I know you're not. I know it. All right. Now, don't forget the dance number later. All right, okay. Okay, well, good. We're so glad you're here for the yearly wed game. Now, I'm going to just announce that each of these couples in front of you, teeth in my mouth, each of these couples in front of you have been married for approximately 1 year as of May or June. So why don't we give it up for each of these couples? Yeah, all right. I got a smile over there. How about that one, huh? All right, good. We can use some more pictures, too. We have an Instagram page, and we'll be like, woo, we're awesome here. Okay. All right, so here's the way it's going to work. I hadn't intended for my accent to be like a southerner, but it is now, so we're going to go with it. Okay, so here's what's going to happen. You've got some pieces of paper in front of you and a pen. It's hard to say pen without marker. Marker, thank you, sir. It is a marker in front of you. It's not a pen. Okay. Woo, there's some funny teeth here. Okay, all right, so what's going to happen is I'm going to ask you a question. And you're back-to-back, so you can't see each other's answers. And don't look at his answers, and don't look at her answers, and none of that. Okay, so I'm going to ask you a question, and are you doing a selfie? Dude, we're playing a game here, all right? So what we're going to do is I'm going to ask you some questions, and then you're going to answer what you think the answer is, and what you think the answer is, and what you think, and what you think, and what you think, and what you think. Isn't that brilliant? It's a new idea. I know. Crazy. Okay. So, but you're going to have one piece of paper per answer. So you have to write it big so everybody can see your answer. But don't let your partner, your wife or husband, your spouse, I can say that one, your spouse see the answer. Okay. So here's the question. So understand what we're going to do? It's going to be based on some things. So like some questions might be like, what does the husband think? And the wife is going to answer what the husband thinks. And the husband is going to answer what the husband thinks. You get it so far? Yes, okay. All right, now, so, we got a number of questions here. And by the way, the couples that get the same answer get points. And the couple with the most points, they're the winner. So if you have more points than everyone else, but you know what we're talking about here. Okay, so, get it? Good. This is easy. So you don't have to say a word, just write your answer on the paper here. If you get the most points, using your pen, the couple with the most points gets to win. Okay, so here's the first question. So don't look at each other's answers. Don't cheat. You can write big on your paper with your pen. And the first question is, what is the first question? Within three, how many pairs of shoes will your wife say she has? So wives, you answer what you think the number of shoes you have is. And husbands, you write down, within three, how many pairs of shoes Well, your wife say that she has. So that will be a numeral, a number on a piece of paper. Some of them are counting a lot. Okay, so write your answer down. Write it in big so we can all see it. Do you have your answer, sir? Okay. Do you have an answer, ma'am? Sir, have an answer? What are we doing here? Okay, all right, good. Got it. Let's show us your number. Okay. Oh, okay. All right, so within three, how many? So let's just start over here. Why don't you both show your answer? Oh, Mr. Brock Tyler says seven. Jess says five. You can see each other's answer now. You can look at his seven. You have five. So hey, that's a point. You got a point. So somebody keep track of the points that these people have. So they got a point. All right. All right. Why don't you, the Fetters, what have you got here?
Whoa.
8 and 20. So no point for you. No point for you. Okay. All right. Now, and you've got, go ahead and show your answer. Oh, not so good either. 4 and 15. So no points for you. He's like, where are you storing those shoes? All right. Okay, so no point for you. We've got 1 point here. But now, just so you know, Sean has 17 pairs of shoes. So just so you know, he counted, and Sean has 17 pairs of shoes in his closet. Not counting flip-flops, because they don't count. Would that change your number? Anyway, all right, that's the first question. So good, all right, you got 1 point, but none of you got the right amount that Sean has in his closet, so that kind of doesn't really count. But anyway, here's the next question. Here we go. Now listen, this is for husbands. What one item of clothing does your husband wear that you just can't stand? Now remember, there are some children in the audience. So we'd appreciate that you don't talk about, well, I'm not going to say what I'm going to talk about, so just don't say that. Okay, so according to, so which one, and so husband, what do you think that your wife would say is the one piece of clothing that your wife can't stand? And you write down what you think the one piece of clothing that you can't stand. Do you get it? Oh, now that's not even fair. That's not even fair. You don't have to go there. All right, now just write down your, come on people, we got a timeline here. All right, so what one item of clothing does your husband wear that you just can't stand? I don't want that to be your answer because we have a family audience here. Her page is blank. Just write down what you think your best answer is. Just make something up. All right, you got an answer? Got an answer? Okay, got an answer? Okay, yeah? Yeah? No? We're not waiting on you or anything. All right, you got an answer? You got something? Okay, we got something going on here. Ooh. I'm not evaluating or nothing. Okay, so let's start at this end. So what one item of clothing does your husband wear that you just can't stand? Couple? Old man PJ fans, old man PJ fans. All right, all right, all right, all right. You get a point. A point for them. So someone keep track of the point for them. Okay, Federer visitors. What have we got here? Red stripe shirt, red stripe polo. All right, all right, all right. A point for you. All right, so, all right, what have we got down here, Silas? A sad face and stinky sneakers. I don't think that counts. So, point for you. But good answer. But by the way, just in case you're wondering, Sean looks good in anything. So just so you know, like, there's nothing that he wears that doesn't look good. Now, I'm Tad Finkelstein, so I'm not Sean. Hey, no audience participation here. This is not one of those games. Okay, so, all right, number three question. We need to move on here. We actually have some things we need to talk about eventually. Okay, so, when your wife says, honey, they're playing our song, what song are they playing? Oh, now, when your wife says, honey, they're playing our song, what song are they playing? Some answers down on the paper. It's good, it's good. Got an answer? Got an answer? Okay, got something? You have an answer? Oh, you're thinking, sorry, I don't want to disturb your thinking. It's important to think. pink. Got an answer here? Okay. It looks like we got an answer. We're still thinking over here. Not like we're going to be talking about anything important today. So we'll just stay here while you think about a song. No two answers. That is unfair. No. You're not between nothing. Do karate yes, stiff. Do karate no, stiff. Do karate yes, no, just like this. Okay. Are we good? Come on, lady. You going to sing it? You want to pull out Google? Are you sure you don't want to sing it? You sure look like you want to. Sorry, my dentures got some issues. So, just, like, do you want to write the music notes down? Do you need to, like, play it on the guitar real quick? I will take lyrics. We'll accept lyrics. Yeah, most likely. It's your song. Because it says, honey, they're playing our song. So it's your song. So you can make one up if you want. To be like, I can't do that. Oh, well, you might get a half point. Okay, so let's start with the fetishes. What is the song that when they say, honey, I'm playing their song? Now I know how the river feels. All right. You got a point. I don't even know what that song means. I don't know how it feels. There's a point for you. All right, we'll start down here. Okay, what do you think the song sounds like? Because he's got an answer here. It was our wedding song. The wedding song you walk down to, Sean still has that playlist on his phone. Not a Moment Too Soon. All right, we'll give him Not a Moment Too Soon. Yeah, all right, go faster here. All right, Crestus, what have you got? I'm not going to. Oh, show it up. She was made for me by Toby Mac, and Toby Mac made for me. All right. All right, that's a point for you and a point for you and a point for you. Okay. Moving on here. All right, got to go faster. By the way, Sean's song is Groovy Kind of Love. That was the song that was played at his wedding. Wouldn't you agree, baby, with me? I mean, that's not me. Who are you talking about? What? Anyway. Okay, so what is your wife's favorite comfort food? We need to go faster here. Got to go faster. You're taking too long. Favorite comfort food. What does comfort food mean? I don't know. It's in quotes. You just make it up yourself. All right. Come on. Favorite comfort food. What is your wife's favorite comfort food? You know, ham makes your head hot. It's kind of hot in my head. So, you know, because this is, you know, whatever. All right, you got an answer? Okay, yeah. You got an answer? Okay, good. Okay, all right, why don't we start back here at the end with the silence? Please hold up your answers. Not the same. Pasta and Steak and Shake are not the same. But this is more like a food. That's like a restaurant. Can you get pasta at Steak and Shake? You could, but that's cheating, so we're not counting that. But you don't. Why don't you get pasta there? Because it's Steak and Shake, yo. Steak and Shake. Okay. All right. So what we got here? Comfort food. Pizza. Whoa. Feathers. This. All right. That's another point for you. So you get. Well, you have 3 points. So 3 points for them. Okay, so how many points do we have here? Two? Oh, I was off my... Whew, that would have been embarrassing. We had to, like, catch it and put it back in my mouth. Okay, all right, questions. What have we got? Chocolate cake and Thai food and tea. Oh, that's the everyday food. Okay, so sorry, no point for you. Moving on. By the way, Sean's comfort food is sausage biscuits and gravy. With a little ratatouille on the side. It's really good for his cholesterol, but he loves it anyway. Okay, so next question. If your husband could have access, constant access to one store, what store would it be? If your husband could have constant access to one store, what does that question mean? I don't know. You just answer how you think the answer should be answered. Okay, so if your husband could have access to one store, what store would that store be? Home, people. Come on. Got some answers. We're waiting on you again. Okay. All right. Down here, we should do last. I don't know. Crestus, go what you got here. We got Cabela's and they both sell the same kind of stuff, but they are not the same store. So, sorry, no points for you. Okay, Feathers, what have we got here? Nose and nose. You guys got it going on. Okay, all right. Oh. We got Lowe's here. I think she knows you better than you know you. She says a moto store. How do you pronounce that? Cernix. Yeah, then she probably didn't see. Hang her head in shame. All right, good. All right. Okay, moving on. We need to go faster. Okay, this is a complicated question. Children in the audience. Okay. Which candy best describes your first kiss? Starburst, Good and Plenty, Hot Tamales, Goobers, Milk Duds, or Zero? So if you need, those are your options. You can look up on the screen if you're not sure. But which word candy describes your first kiss? Because you both shared that first kiss. That's what I'm talking about. Your first kiss with each other. You know, not with other people or nothing like that. Because the answer is zero for the rest. That's the correct answer. But your first kiss with your husband and wife, you know, the one you're married to, everybody that we're talking about here. So what was it? Come on, don't get this one wrong, man. Ain't much lower than you can go, brother. Starburst? Anyway. Okay, Starburst, Good and Plenty, Hot Tamales, Goobers, Milk Duds, and Zero. You have an answer? Do you have an answer, ma'am? Yes, sir, you have an answer? No, not yet. Okay, we got an answer here. Got an answer there. All right. It's a good answer. Alright. Okay. Alright. We good yet, sir? Right. Come on. Getting hot. Okay, so let's start here with the Feathers, who are like the reigning champions right now. Way ahead of everybody with lots of points. But you're like 5 points. So, okay, what we got? Starburst and Good and Plenty. Oh, good answer. But you're not the same, so sorry. All right, moving over here. No points for you. Hot Tamales and Starburst. So good answer, son, but you're wrong. I mean, you know, it didn't work. That's a good answer. Just you remember that later. Okay. All right. Let's see what we got here, Christmas. Good and Plenty and Starburst. Oh, nobody. All good answers. Glad nobody put zero, because that would be unfortunate. But maybe your first kiss was zero. Sean's first kiss was like a Starburst. It was like, woo! That was good. That's what he tells me. Anyway, that's not here. You can ask Kendra, his wife. She'd be like, woohoo, Starburst. Okay. So moving on to your next question. Are we at the end here? Oh, we're close to the end. Yeah, who is the better cook? Who's the better cook? We're gonna ignore that we're doing a series called "Less of Me," so don't be like, "Oh, I'm gonna be humble and be like her or him." Like, if it's you, be you, yo. All right. Everybody have an answer? That was the last question. So you guys have like 5 points, and you guys have, what do we have over here? Anybody like two? Two or three? Like two and a half points. And what we got over here? We got like 1 point and a head full of shame. 1 point and a head full of shame. Okay, all right, so why don't we start with you guys, because maybe this is the chance. So who is the better cook? Brock and me. All right, we got a point here. Hey, how about it? All right, why don't we go here, Feathers? Me and Nat. Okay, we're on the same page here. Good answer. Oh, he is in the Eric. All right, we got it again. So why don't we give it up for these three couples that got these points right? Now, unfortunately, your question answers are wrong, because Sean is a better cook than all y'all. That's what I think. So why don't we give it up? Thank you guys for participating in our yearly wet game. Congratulations and happy anniversary. And it was such a privilege for Sean to have married you all, because Sean is a pretty amazing guy. So he's a love that we're feeling. So, thank you guys very much. So being married for a year is a pretty special thing, and especially being married by Sean, because I understand that Sean is a pretty swell guy, and I am not Sean, but I understand he's over here. So I'm going to go get him real quick. Whoop, turn the lights off. Hey, it's Sean. Hi, guys. You're acting like you didn't do it. Okay, so Tad Finkelstein, of course, was constantly talking about how awesome Sean was. And what would have been awesomer, because that's a word, is if that happened during the wedding. Because as a pastor, I had the privilege of officiating as a friend to each of these couples, but actually performing the wedding ceremonies for the three of them. That was in the marathon season where I had, what, 4 weddings in 6 weeks, I think is how we pulled it off. So it was an intense time, and got that covered, okay? Yeah, it's pretty intense out there too. But here's the thing about a wedding, right? If I, as the one performing their ceremony, spent the entire ceremony talking about me as the star, as the focus, which granted, I probably have more power than the couple does because, you know, I need to sign off and all that, although they don't really need me anymore these days. But you know, I've got some authority there. But the focus isn't me. The wedding is not about me. And I will tell you, I will probably get punched by brides if, you know, we're getting ready for the ceremony and they're getting their dress, checking in, how's it going? Hey, guys, just remember it's about me. Like that, at that point, like, you don't mess with the bride. You don't. You don't mess with the bride. Don't mess with the bride. And so it's not about me. It's about them. It's their day. To the point where even when it comes time for I say, you know, Mr. and Mrs., blah, 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 you know, you may kiss your bride, I often will step back. Because, you know, what happens in that moment in the audience? What happens? Pictures, right? Everybody's taking the pictures and clap, right? There's the pictures, the photos. I don't want to be photobombing their picture. Like, hey, look at that beautiful kiss and that weird bald guy. Because it's not about me. And so I try to step away. I try to get back so I'm not in the scene. Because that day is not about me at all, at all, at all. And I even have these conversations in our premarital counseling with couples. You know, they talk about the plans for the day and all the things that they're going to do. And I'm like, guys, just enjoy yourself. This is your day. Don't let the drama creep in. Don't be worrying about cleaning up. It's your day. Enjoy it, because this is your day. And that's like one of the few times that we get to celebrate something and say it's your day. And we do that for birthdays, which is really dumb, because you had no part in your birthday. Really? Like, hey, it's your birthday. Yeah, I know. I was just along for the ride. But thanks for celebrating. But the whole point is that the wedding is not about me. It's not about the friend. It's not about the best man. It's not about the maid of honor or the matron of honor. The wedding is about the couple. And for anyone else to get in the way, and again, I'm not kidding, you mess with a bride on a wedding day, you're going down. You will be hurt. Because it's not your day, it's their day. And I want to talk about this idea because John the Baptist, crazy, right? We're doing this series on John the Baptist. We've been looking for the last month, and we're going to finish his life this month in June. He actually talks about this same thing. John the Baptist says, I don't want a photobomb on Jesus' wedding. He doesn't say that exactly, that's a different translation. But it's a similar concept because John the Baptist understood, as we've been talking about this whole series, it's not about him, it's not about us, it's about Jesus. It's about humility. It's about less of me and more of him. And the point that I want you guys to get this week as we look at more into the life of John the Baptist is that less of me means more sacrificing my success. And again, in the wedding ceremony, I mean, really, I'm the one with the authority, with the power, quote unquote. And I've actually, you know, done weddings where we're like, wow, that didn't work out. Let's just kind of go here real quick and get married in our lobby. We've done that a couple of times. And because I'm the one that with the power. But it is not my position to say, hey, yeah, I'm the star. I'm the main guy. No, my role as the friend, as the officiant, as the pastor is to say, no, this isn't about me. I'm out of the way. It's about you guys succeeding. It's about you being the star. And it's the same thing when we do premarital counseling with couples. And it's not because I'm like, hey, I need some people to hang out with, which is kind of obvious when they come in and meet with me in my office. They're like, you don't talk to people much during the day, do you? No, I don't. No, why? But it's not for me. It's so that I can help them grow as a couple and grow in the relationship with each other and in communication and with Jesus, ultimately. And I don't do that because I want to be the star. I'm like, I don't want to check my stuff off. It's because it's about them. And this is the point. When it comes to being less, when it comes to being humble, we need to be willing to sacrifice. And sacrifice is not a pleasant word. Sacrifice means death. Sacrifice means giving up. And if we're going to truly be people of humility, if we're truly going to be thinking less of me and more of Jesus, we're going to have to sacrifice our success. We're going to have to sacrifice our rise to the top, our movement
to the beginning. And again, here's the definition for humility, just so we're all on the same page. We've done it five times. It's the fifth time we're doing it, so we'll just get over it real quickly. It is this something, the quality or condition of being humble, a modest opinion or estimate of one's own importance, rank, etc. So that's humility. That's what this idea of sacrificing our success, making it about less of me and more of Jesus. So we're going to look at John chapter 3. We've been kind of working our way through the life of John the Baptist. Now, the author of the book of John was not John the Baptist. That was actually a different John who, in fact, did live to the crucifixion and was there when Jesus was hung on the cross. John the Baptist, spoiler, didn't make it. He didn't quite make it to the cross. So we're here in John 3, and this is another kind of the next step of the story, the timeline, the chronology of John's life. And last week we were looking at how Jesus finally came on the scene. And John said, you know, his role was to be the forerunner. He was the one that set the stage. He was the stage, he was the Jeremy for today. You know, he was the one that kind of got everything in place so that when Jesus walked on the scene, things were ready. And so last week, Jesus walked onto the scene. And that was the kind of the first step in like the big crescendo of what we've been looking for in this life, in the story of John the Baptist. And so here we continue on with the story. It says, after this, Jesus and his disciples, now we're talking about Jesus and his disciples, went out into the Judean countryside where he spent some time with them and baptized. So Jesus now, John the Baptist, Jesus, got his disciples, his followers, and they're baptizing. Meanwhile, now John was also baptizing at Aenon near Salim because there was plenty of water. And that's, water is an issue when you don't have any, when you live in the desert. So there's plenty of water. And people were coming and being baptized. This is before John was put into prison. Shh. Spoiler. So you've got Jesus and his disciples baptizing people, and you've got John and his followers are being baptized. And again, we talk about baptism means that in this way it was a sign to be identified with a follower, with a teacher, as a follower, with a teacher, with a leader. So if you were baptized, they were being baptized in the name of Jesus because they were following him. They were baptized in the name of John in terms of turning from their sin and starting to follow God. And so there's these two guys baptizing. And an argument developed between some of John's disciples and a certain Jew over the matter of ceremonial washing. They came to John and said to him, Rabbi, that man who was with you on the other side of the Jordan, the one you testified about, look, he is baptizing, and everyone is going to him. To this, John replied, a person can receive only what is given them from heaven. You yourselves can testify that I said, I am not the Messiah, but I am sent ahead of him. The bride belongs to the bridegroom. The friend who attends the bridegroom waits and listens for him and is full of joy when he hears the bridegroom's voice. That joy is mine, and it is now complete. He must become greater, I must become less. The one who comes from above is above all. The one who is from the earth belongs to the earth and speaks as one from the earth. The one who comes from heaven is above all. So let's kind of break this down. Like I said, John kind of did the same thing. I don't want to be in the way. I don't want to get in the way of what Jesus is doing. I don't want to photobomb his picture. The story isn't about me. I am not the bride. I am not the groom. I'm just the friend. And so his job was to make that day, using the same illustration, successful for Jesus. And so John was getting out of the picture. And that was his role even here. And this is such a powerful passage, especially if you have ever built or grown or developed anything of your own. If you're a business owner, if you've kind of run your own business, or if you've started a school club, or if you lead a ministry or anything like that, what John did here is so crazy. Because when we build something ourselves, we work at it, we put effort towards it, and the goal is to be successful. If we build a church, the goal is to not have 200 people, but have 300. Not have 300. I actually heard a conversation last week in Memorial Day with some of our family members, and they were talking about this church and how it had the small service. They were like, yeah, the small service really isn't doing well. It only has 500 people. The other service has 1,200. And like, yeah, those poor losers. 500. Because, you know, that's the way ministry, that's the way we develop things, is we want to be successful. But John shows us that it's not about success. It's about getting out of the way and giving Jesus the credit, giving Jesus the glory. And so in John getting out of the picture, first of all, there is this idea of the plot thickening. This is what's going on. So again, John is baptizing. John, I think John was over here, right? And Jesus is baptizing. And so they go out there. They're both baptizing. An argument developed between some of John's disciples, so John's followers, and a certain Jew. We don't know who that Jew was. Over the matter of ceremonial washing. Now, the Greek phrase for ceremonial washing, it essentially means baptism. So they're having this discussion about baptism. One could, you know, maybe it was something like, well, why should we follow? Because of the next context, maybe they were saying, well, why should we follow John if Jesus is baptizing her? Or, you know, what do we need to do here? And so there's some kind of discussion about baptism. And John's disciples, John's followers, come to him and say, you know, to John, Rabbi, that man who was with you on the other side of the Jordan. Like, I wonder later if these guys look back and were like, I knew who he was. Son of God, rising from the dead. But anyway, they're like, that man, whoever he was, John, that guy Jesus. Anyway, that guy Jesus who was with you on the other side of the Jordan, the one you were talking about, the one you testified about, look, he is baptizing, and everyone's going to him. Now, come on, John, what's the deal here? Look, we need to do something about this. Maybe we need a capital campaign. Maybe we need to raise some money so that people don't go to Jesus and they come back to you, John. Or maybe there's some tricks or some techniques. Maybe we just need to rough them up a bit. Because I know a guy. He could go out there and do that thing to those guys. And that'd be the end of that. Like, you know, they're like, something's wrong. Because, John, these followers, they're your followers. These aren't just random people. These are your followers are leaving you and going to Jesus. These people are leaving your church and are going to another church. These people are not being a part of what you created. They're being a part of what he's doing. And this is where I'm like, yeah, come on, what's up? What are we going to do here? How are we going to solve this? How are we going to fix this problem? Because this is not right. Who do these guys think they are? Leaving John for Jesus. And that is the story is building. The plot is thickening because now John has to decide. Am I going to put my money where my mouth is? This is where the rubber meets the road. You know, am I going to be real with this? Or is everything that we have been talking about for the last month just been for show? Just been words? And so, John starts with his response. And the first thing we see, and there's just some random kind of, not random, but some things we can learn when it comes to sacrificing our success. The first basis that John starts with is that what we have is from God. So when we talk about the thing that we built or the stuff that we've got or the house that we bought or the job that we've worked our way to the top or the money that we've made or the car that we purchased, you don't have that because of you. Please don't miss that. Everything that we have is from God. And so it's not our responsibility. This is kind of a separate topic, but it's not our job to hold on to it and say it's mine because it's not yours. Your life is not yours. Everything that we have, the breath, the success, the job, the house, the clothing, the children, whatever, all of it comes from God. And so that's the foundation that we need to realize and get when it comes to being able to give up our success. Because when we realize that it's not mine in the first place, that changes the story a bit. It reframes the picture. Because if someone comes to me and says, John, you know, MC3 has been great, but, you know, we feel like we need to go to a different church where, you know, we're not growing the way we would like to or things like that. I need to be like, no, this is my church and I started it. And who do you think you are to leave? And I have been a part of ministries like that. I've been a part of being one of those people. But then we realize, no, this isn't my church. This isn't my stuff. This is God's thing. And so if God is bigger than me, then maybe I can trust him. And that's what John says. The first thing he says in verse 27 is he says to his followers, to this John replied, a person can receive only what is given them from heaven. So here's John saying, you know, or the people saying these people are leaving, and John's going like, look, whatever we had, have, or will have is only because of God. Anything that we've got is because of him. And Jesus is the Son of God. Jesus is God. So that's kind of important to remember in this conversation. He says right away, like, anything we've got is from God. And we need to get that. And John understood that. So whether he had lots of followers or zero followers, it wasn't him. He wasn't. I mean, we looked at it a couple weeks ago. I mean, there was nothing about him. He wore camel fur. camel hair and ate locusts and honey. He probably smelled kind of funky. He lived in the desert. So it wasn't like you're like, hey, you're such a dashing young fellow. Why don't we follow you? He says anything that we had is because of what God has given. And a person can receive only what is given them from heaven. And then he goes on and he realizes that I have to apologize here. There was a messed up typo here that they kind of hung on the next slide. But we are not why people show up. We are not why people show up. And I was trying to find a different way to put this. You know, we're not the star. We're not the headliner. We're not the one that, when it comes to the movie poster, our name is at the top. Even if you're the extra. Even if you're the person that was there and you were, you know, guy in scene 3. We're not the star. We're not the headliner. When you think about the wedding illustration, I don't say, hey guys, come on out. I'm doing another win. Come on, everybody. It's about me. No. We're not the reason that people show up. We're not the star. We're not you are not the reason. The lives that are changed aren't because of you. People aren't growing in Jesus because of your winsomeness or your charming personality or your rugged good looks. It's nothing about it. Not that those things are bad, but understand it's not us. We're not the reason. Like, if we're here to say, yeah, you know, let's sing all these worship songs about how wonderful we are as a church, we've missed it because it's not about us. That's what worship is. And we've been there 10,000 years. That's still not enough to cover how amazing God is. And yet somehow we start to think, oh, yeah, I'm the reason people are here. And this goes beyond church. Please, I'm not talking about Sunday morning. I'm saying everything in your life, if you think that there is something about you that makes you powerful and makes you wonderful and special, we need to realize that if that's what people are attracted to and they don't see something bigger, if they don't see something deeper in you, if they don't see a Jesus in you, you are, let's be honest here, you're essentially sending people to hell. Because if you're trying to draw people and say, hey, there's something about me that's wonderful, and they say, I want to know what that is, and you're like, oh, it's me. Like, you've left them without hope. Because you're not the hope of the world. I'm not the hope of the world. We're not the reason why people are showing up. And John understood that too. Like, I am not the focus here. It's not about me. It's about Jesus. So he says, you yourselves testify that I said, I am not the Messiah. The Messiah, the anointed one, the Christ, the one that people have been waiting for. I am not him, but I was sent ahead of him. I am not the star here. I am the background person. I'm the stage crew. I am out of the scene. Jesus is the star. And he says, the bride belongs to the bridegroom. The bride belongs to the bridegroom, not the friend, not the pastor. It's not about like, hey, Jason, let's ditch Natalie and let's go hang out. You know, like, who needs her today? Like, I know she's all dressed in white and all that, but do you see what they've got over here to eat? That's some good barbecue. Let's skip the ceremony and just hang out together. Like, no! No! Natalie is a quiet, soft-spoken person, but I think I would get hurt. I do. I think she would take me out. Because it's not about the bridegroom and the friend. It's about the bride and the groom. The bride and the groom. That is their day. They are the stars. They are the focus. They are the ones that people are coming to see. When they come to the show, when you come to a movie, you're coming to see the stars, not the person that was, you know, again, person on street who got hit by car. So he says, the bride belongs to the bridegroom. The friend who attends the bridegroom waits and listens for him, and is full of joy when he hears the bridegroom's voice. One of the translations says, is full of joy when the bride makes his vows. When the bridegroom makes his vows. And so the friend is almost like the best man too. You know, your job is to make sure they show up and then get out of the way. That's the job of the best man. That's the job of the matron of honor. Of the friends to say, no, I'm full of joy when I hear that couple say, I do. I love it. I love it. I love what's beginning, the beauty of marriage and what's going to happen here. And so as a pastor, like, I get excited when I say that, like, you know, and now, ladies and gentlemen, it's my privilege for the very first time. Like, oh, not many people get that privilege. Like, that's cool. To say, you know, I present to you Mr. and Mrs. and I'm like, yeah, it's exciting. But it's not about me. It's because it's about them. And that's what John is saying. You know what? Jesus is on the scene here. And he is trying to draw his bride, which is us, the church, his followers. He is the groom, And we are His bride. We are the ones. And there's all sorts of illustrations and analogies that are throughout the Bible about what this looks like. But this kind of wonderful celebration that when His followers, His bride, comes to meet Him, we, the church, then the party starts. And so John is like, hey, my job, I'm not the reason why people are showing up. My job is to say, hey, look, there's the groom. Bride, go be with Him. People, go be with Him. Our job as followers of Jesus is to say, it's not about me. It's about Him. And look, whatever I can do to arrange the date, whatever I can do to set up this moment where you encounter Jesus, then that's the focus. That's the goal. And we need to get out of the picture. And then the final one thing here that we see in this is that losing, and this is, I apologize, losing is how we win. That's what that's supposed to say. Something happened weird with that up, and it ended up in the wrong line. But losing is how we win. And if we really want to be successful with what really matters, then we're going to have to be willing to lose. And that doesn't make sense. It doesn't follow what we've been taught, or the way we've been, you know, grown and raised as Americans, as people, whatever. But the idea is that if we want to be successful, we're going to need to lose ourselves. It's going to need to be less of me and more of Him. And that means we are not the winners. Because if we're the winners, then we're the focus. And if we're the focus, then we haven't won anything. Other people are even more lost, at a loss, if they are following us. So then John goes on and says there that he must become greater. I must become less. The one who comes from above is above all. The one who is from the earth belongs to the earth. So he says, look, Jesus is from above. He is over everything. He is the star. He is the most important. So His job, if I can do anything I can to make Him look bigger, better, and more wonderful, and that means that I'm not, then I am winning by losing. If I can make Jesus the star, then my success is no longer in quotes. It's not success from a human standpoint. It's because I have pointed people to Jesus. And that's what our job is. That is our role. We are to point to Him because we are not the hope. We are not the wonder of the world. We're not the best thing there is. Jesus is. And John says, look, He must become greater. I must become less. He's above all. He's better than that. I'm just from the earth. I'm just human. I'm going to die. But Jesus is from heaven. And He is above all. And so John understood that, and he realizes that we need to have that same perspective, that losing is how we win. If we're trying to be the most successful, if we're trying to make it to the top for our name's sake, then you've lost. But if you say, no, it's not about me, I'm going to use whatever I can and leverage whatever I can to get people to look at Jesus, to help arrange the date between the bride and the groom, then that is real success. That is our real win. That is what our job is, because it's not about being successful and saying, yeah, look what I've done. Look what I've achieved in my life. Look what I've accomplished. And I'm telling you, I mean, there were a number of funerals over the last few months, and the discussions at the funerals and the memorial services, like nobody sits and talks about, well, yeah, you know, he did get a silver star on the wall of fame at the back of the McDonald's. I don't know, like he didn't, there's no discussion about the number of managerial awards this person has won, or how many, you know, Michelin stars their restaurant, like nobody talks about that. What it comes down to is, here's what they did in my life. And the stories that come out when there's a time for people to share, like, he'll never know. But there was this one time he said this one thing, and that changed me forever. He doesn't realize, she doesn't realize, but when she sat down and just prayed with me because I was hurting, put their arm around me, I wanted to know what this Jesus thing was, and I turned my life around, and now I'm following Jesus, and I have hope for eternity. Like, those are the kind of things that matter at the end. It's not about how far you got. It's not about how much you earned. It's about really being able to point people to Jesus. And this is so countercultural. Because it's sacrifice. Because it requires us to give up something. And that's the point. That less of me means more sacrificing my success. We need to be willing to give up our achievements, our accomplishments for Jesus. I'm not saying we sit around and be like, no, I'm not doing nothing now. I'm just sacrifice to my success. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, who is the star? Who is the one that is getting the credit? Are you pointing that way, or are you pointing this way? Is it about me, and look what I've achieved, or is it about leveraging and using what I've got, and using our positions, using our jobs, using our talents, our abilities, the gifts that God has given us, to say, I want to use everything that I've got for His sake, or do we say, I want to use some of what I got for Him, and I'll use most of it for me? Because He is above all. He is the most important thing. He must become greater, and we must become less. Or we're going to succeed in things, get to the end of our lives, as we'll see in a moment, and not really succeed in a thing. So less of me means more sacrificing my success. Now, during these next few things, I want us to look deep. I want you to look deep. We talked about this last week, too, just kind of looking at ourselves. I have no real, like, here's six steps of what you can do to make sure that you're more sacrificial. I want just to share a few thoughts, and I'm not talking to you. I want you to look at you and answer these questions. Because I think a lot of times we say, I'm totally willing to sacrifice for Jesus. Like, yeah, I am. I'm in Jesus. No, I mean, we're even on a real, like, not weird sounding like that guy. But, you know, we're like, yeah, I'm willing to sacrifice for Jesus. But I want to ask you, are you really ready to sacrifice? Because we're willing to sacrifice things as long as it doesn't require sacrifice. We're willing to give things up as long as we don't have to give up something that we actually want. And this is just some questions. I want us to look deep. I want you to look deep and say, am I really? Because if not, you either need to make some changes or get out. I don't mean get out, like get out of the tunnel. I mean get out right now. I mean get out, like, you know, don't fake it. Like, stop trying to fake this thing if you're not in. Like, there's other things you can do with your Sunday morning. There's other things you can do with your life. If you know you're not going to do the Jesus thing, then don't. I mean, you're going to regret it, ultimately. But let's stop fooling around here. Let's stop faking it. So are you really ready to sacrifice? The first thing I need you to do is to check your attitude. Check your attitude. Look deep at your attitude. Are you really? Do you have an attitude that says, yeah, I am willing to give up whatever it takes? Are you really ready to give up whatever it takes? Well, I'll give that up and that up, but I won't give that up. I've been at this job for 15 years. There's no way I'm going to give that up. Are you willing to give up your home for someone else, for a need God calls you to do that? Are you willing to give up your stuff, your family, your health? Well, I'll go so far, but not that far. Well, I just ask you to check your attitude. Jesus, in Philippians chapter 2, Paul talks about this. He says, you must have, doesn't say should or maybe it'd be neat, you must have the same attitude that Christ Jesus had. What was His attitude? Though He was God, Jesus, we're talking about Jesus, the Son of God, fully man, fully God, we talked about that on week 3 of the 3 series. Though He was God, He did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Though He had every right to say, no, this is about me, He didn't. Instead, He gave up His divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave and was born as a human being. So He had every right to say, yeah, I'm God, worship me, everyone stay, you know, I'm not doing a thing. Instead, no, His attitude was, because of my love for us, because of His love for us, He said, I'm not willing to stay there. He gave up heaven, came to live on this earth. This earth smells. We smell. It's full of sin and rot and decay. And He says, He's giving up heaven to come to this earth and not just become a human, but He became a human slave. He sacrificed His own life for us. When He appeared in human form, He humbled Himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on a cross. Unlike us, who can't say that what we have we've earned, Jesus could. He could say, everything I've got is from me. And yet His attitude was one of sacrifice. He said, no, it's not about me clinging to what I've got. And we need to have the same attitude. Are we willing to truly sacrifice? Are we clinging to, no, this, I've earned this, I've worked hard at it, I'm good at it, it hurt to give it up. So we need to check our attitude. And the second thing is to check your spending. Check your spending. And I'm talking about spending two things. There's two kinds of currency that we have. We have time and we have money. That's what we've got to work with. How much time are you going to spend on something? How much money are you going to spend on something? And usually they're related. You know, if you want to save money, you put in the time and do the work yourself. If you want to save time, you hire someone else to do the work for you. They're interchangeable, they're related, but how are you in what you're spending? What are you spending your time and your money on? In Luke chapter 14, Jesus says this. He says, don't begin. Don't begin. He's talking about following Him. He's talking about becoming a Christ follower. He says, don't begin until you count the cost. Don't get into this until you realize what it's going to take. He says, for who would begin construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there's enough money to finish it? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of money. And then everyone would laugh at you. They would say, there's the person who started that building and couldn't afford to finish it. We know of that locally. There is a building skeleton out in the valley that has been there for a long time because they couldn't afford to finish the project. And we would do that. You would say, okay, do we have enough money? Can we afford to do this? Okay, we can't afford that, so let's trim some things here and we'll do that differently. Like, we plan that kind of stuff. He goes on and says, what king would go to war against another king without first sitting down with his counselors to discuss whether his army of 10,000 could defeat the 20,000 soldiers marching against him? You're not going to go into battle. If you've only got 10, they've got 20. You're going to say, okay, who are we dealing with here? I've got 10,000 ninjas, and they've got 20,000. Are those children? Did they just put a bat in their hand? I think we're going to be able, okay. We're going to be okay with this. Or is it going to be an issue of going, okay, whoa, 10 to 20,000, yeah, I'm out. And then he sees that he can't, he's going to send a delegation to discuss terms of peace while the enemy is still far away. He's like, okay, you know, sorry, buddy, how's it going? You know, hey, you want my hat? You know, I got some stuff for you. Flowers, you're really swell. Please don't bring your 20,000 against me. Because that's what we do. I mean, we would plan a battle strategy. That's what happens. You don't get into something without seeing how much is it going to cost. What is it going to cost? What's it going to take to actually do this thing? And Jesus says to his followers, look, before you get into this, make sure you understand what it's going to cost you. He says, you cannot become my disciple. You cannot become my disciple without giving up everything you own. So what does your spending look like? When it comes to the cost, how do you spend your money? One of the things we did, I remember way back at the beginning of MC3 when we had our first budget planning meeting with the finance team, I brought a calendar and a checkbook. Now, nobody uses checkbooks anymore, but you know, we've got digital online, our apps or whatever, our bank account apps. But one way to answer this question, to look deep and say, am I truly ready to sacrifice, am I really willing to do this, is look at your calendar and look at your bank account. Because those two things will tell you your priorities. And if your bank account says a whole lot of sports, and very little Jesus, then you have a priority problem. If your calendar says job, I think I can get church in here today. Job, can't quite make it to be with my prime group. Job, I know that person needs my help, but you know what, I don't really have time for that. You know, then you have a priority problem. If you look at your bank account, and please don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about, like, you need to be in church every Sunday morning or Jesus won't love you. It's not what I'm saying. But we need to really look deep and say, where are we spending our time? The other thing is our checking account, our bank accounts. What is your, you know, if you look through your statement, because that is telling. Because we spend money and we're like, yeah, you know, swipe, dab, dot, whatever. And all of a sudden, you know, that's not a big deal. It's just one transaction. But when you go back over the last 2 months, you go, wow. What I spent my money on? What priorities do you see? Is your priority phone? Is your priority cable, satellite, ultimate package? Because, wow, that's where your money's going. Is it your house? wow, you know, if we had a smaller house, we could actually afford to do stuff. But instead, we're socking it away into this huge mortgage. Those are the things that you need to look at and say, what does our calendar look like? What does our checking account, our bank account look like? Because if those things, you're like, yeah, well, come on, you understand. Like, I do have to work, and I've got all these extra things. And, you know, it's really important to be physically fit, and so that's why I'm involved in all these sports. And, you know, it's really important. And we add all these things, and then what you're saying is no to that question. Just let's be real here. Don't say, oh, yeah, I'm really, really willing to sacrifice, but you're not if you're not willing to change those things. Well, I would love to give towards that, but I just can't afford it. Can you? Or are you not willing to make the sacrifices for the sake of what God has called you to do? So check your attitude, check your spending, and then finally, check your heart. And this is what I was alluding to earlier. This is a tough passage. This is a hard verse to read, section of Scripture to read here. In Luke 13, Jesus says, Jesus went through the towns and villages, teaching as he went, always pressing on towards Jerusalem. Someone asked him, Lord, will only a few be saved? He said, Jesus, you know, is everybody going to get to heaven? Is it only just a few people? How is this going to work? And this is what he says in response. He replied, work hard to enter the narrow door to God's kingdom. He talks about a narrow door. It's an analogy. He says, work hard to enter the narrow door to God's kingdom. For many will try to enter, but will fail. Many will say, yeah, I'm willing to sacrifice, but I'm not actually going to do it. I'll use the words, but I'm not going to take the steps that it would require, because that might hurt me. It might affect my lifestyle. It might affect how important I am in my company. It might affect the things that I've worked so hard to earn. He says, they're going to try to enter, but they're going to fail. When the master of the house has locked the door, it will be too late. When we're done, when we're dead, when it's over, it's too late. You can't go like, hey, Jesus. He's talking about Jesus here. He's talking about entering into heaven. It'll be too late. You'll stand outside knocking and pleading, Lord, open the door. Come on, let me in. Let me in. And this is what he says. Open the door for us. But he will reply, Jesus, Master God, will reply, I don't know you or where you come from. And here's the kicker. Like, oh yeah, of course, those people that don't believe in God, and those people that are, you know, out there in that other country that don't even care about Jesus or anything. You know, I get that. I don't know you or where you come from. Then you will say, but we ate and drank with you, and you taught in our streets. So these aren't the outsiders. These aren't the weirdos. These aren't the people that have nothing to do with God. He's talking to people that go through the motions. Jesus, I went to church every Sunday. Jesus, I was at my prime group. Jesus, I gave when that person came to the door and needed help. Jesus, I went on a missions trip. Come on. And he says, the master will say, I tell you, I don't know you or where you come from. Get away from me, all you who do evil. Jesus is saying that there are people that are going through the motions. They are faking it. And he says, check yourself. Work hard to enter this narrow door, because don't get caught up into thinking, well, yeah, I did the motions. I look good. I don't swear a lot. God's going to let me in. No. It's about being willing to give up for the sake of God's kingdom. Be willing to actually follow Jesus. And Jesus says, you cannot follow me if you're not willing to give up. And so there are people, and you might be those people. We need to look deep and check our heart. Why are we doing what we're doing? Why are you here? Like, what is it about church? What is it about? Why are you a Christ follower? Why are you doing this? We need to look and say, is this about just showing up and going through the motions? Is there something deeper here? Because the deeper thing really says, I love you, Jesus, and I am truly, and I'm not saying we're perfect, but this willingness to say, I'm going to follow you wherever you go. Jesus, I'm in. I'm not just going through the motions. Because then when at the end of the day, when our life comes to the end and we're not going, hey, let me in. No, Jesus is already saying, you're in. Welcome. Well done, good and faithful servant. You're here. Good job. But there's going to be some people that are kind of going through the motions and faking it. And he goes on and says, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth, for there you will see Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and all the prophets in the kingdom of God, but you will be thrown out. And people will come from all over the world, from east and west, north and south, to take their places in the kingdom of God. And note this, some who seem least important now will be the greatest then. And some who are the greatest now will be the least important then. Check our hearts. And I'm telling you, like, I have the title pastor. That is not good enough. I planted a church with people. That is not good enough. Do you get it? It's not the outward actions. It's the heart saying, okay, am I truly committed to Jesus? So these are some questions we need to ask ourselves. Check your attitude, check your spending, check your heart. Because we need to realize that it's not about me. It's about sacrificing our success for the sake of God's people. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for your word. And I know it's hard. These are hard things. And they're hard for me. They're hard for all of us to put our minds around, to put our calendars and our checkbooks around. I pray that you would allow us this time to truly look deep and to make the changes that we need to. God, I thank you that we have your word and we can make these decisions now. We can begin now working. Now, we can begin now being who you want us to be so that we don't get to the end and realize that it didn't count. That we didn't do it with the right attitude. That we are still focused on us and ourselves and our wants and our desires. Help us to sacrifice our success for the sake of your kingdom, knowing that your kingdom is better. Help us to have the attitude of John the Baptist and say, hey, it's not about me. I'm just a friend. I'm here to set up the date. I'm here to set up the moment between the bride and the groom. Help us to get out of the way. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.